Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. On our program today, is Canada at the back of the vaccine line?
First, vaccines that roll off an assembly line in a given country are likely to be given to citizens of that particular country.
So after months of touting contract, Canada has to buy big doses of vaccine. Did the Prime Minister just tell Canadians we'll have to wait to get the vaccines until the US, the UK and Germany, who have their own domestic supplies, treat their own first? When will Canada get these precious vaccine doses that we paid for? In a minute, we'll speak to the industry minister, Navdeep Bains. Then we'll bring on the general in charge of Ontario's vaccine rollout, the former chief of the defense staff, General Rick Hillier. Then, Alberta's COVID fail.
This is the only province in the country where there is not a provincial mask mandate. What's the problem, folks? Like, seriously, the evidence is clear.
With skyrocketing case counts and the only province, as you just saw Rachel Notley say, with no mandatory mask mandate, will Premier Jason Kenney break his long and controversial silence and announce new restrictions today? Has Jason Kenney lost control of the pandemic? He is scheduled to speak right after our program tonight. We will speak to the opposition leader and former premier who you just saw, Rachel Notley. She's on the program. Plus, China hardline.
Just look at the international community, Mr. Speaker, and you see Canada has been at the forefront of the response when it came to the Uyghur, when it comes to Hong Kong, when it comes to standing up, being firm and smart. That's what Canadians at home want us, Mr. Speaker, to do.
Should the Foreign Minister Champagne toughen relations with China, as Canadians Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig are still held hostage after more than 700 days? We'll ask former Ambassador to China Guy Saint-Jacques. He's on the press gallery. But first, free Hmong, really? Why are two MPs joining an event that is urging Canada to free Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou? Are they being used by China? One of those MPs, Green Party MP Paul Manley, who's speaking at this event, is going to join us to defend his actions. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players.
I think one of the things to remember is Canada no longer has any domestic production capacity for vaccines. We used to have it decades ago, but we no longer have it. Countries like the United States, Germany, and the UK do have domestic pharmaceutical facilities, which is why they're obviously going to prioritize helping their citizens first.
All right, that was big news today from the Prime Minister telling Canadians, despite the fact that we have bought millions of doses from six or seven different countries, they may serve their own first and make Canadians wait. This is startling news, and in a minute we'll talk to the industry minister to try to clarify what those contracts say and when you will get the vaccine. After all, this is by far the most urgent mission for Canadian governments. And a COVID-19 vaccine rollout, I mean, we need the vaccine to roll it out, but we've got to start the planning, we'll need military precision. That's what the Ontario Premier Doug Ford said. So the Ontario government tapped a military person, the former chief of the defense staff for Canada, Rick Hillier. He is heading up Ontario's vaccine task force. This is a look, there's a list of moving parts to get Ontario and any province to the light at the end of the COVID tunnel. The vaccines need to be delivered. We already know there's a cold storage chain because that's going to be a challenge. The Pfizer vaccine needs to be stored at negative 75. So what do you do to bring this vaccine distribution chain into being? Let's find out. Joining us now is retired General Rick Hillier. Always a pleasure, sir, and thank you for your service to our country over the years, as I always say to you. What is the biggest logistical challenge you have in setting up this massive, massive undertaking, sir?
Well, Evan, first of all, thanks for having me on. Delighted to be here, and I'm delighted to be part of this great mission. I don't think, as the Premier said when I chatted to him, there's nothing more important for the almost 15 million people who live in Ontario and make it their home than getting that vaccine in and getting it distributed appropriately, getting it handled properly, getting the medical professionals ready to administer it, getting it administered in an order of priority, which they will set, and educating on the people of Ontario about how important it is to do these things and being transparent with them. So, you know, it's going to be an awesome job. Each one of those things, though, receiving it, storing it, getting the medical professionals ready and equipped to inoculate people. And, you know, there is some work to do there to be able to track what happens with that vaccine, to be able to educate the public and be transparent with them. And of course, to be able to make sure that as vaccines arrive, they go to the people that need it most first. And each one of those five things are difficult, they're challenging, and that's part of the job of the task force that we're going to put in place and that Premier Ford asked me to head. And so they're challenging, but we're going to run them. We'll do it.
Receiving, storage, training, tracking, educating the public, and obviously who gets it first, there's a lot in that chain. Justin Trudeau today said, we don't have a domestic supply. We get that. No vaccine is being produced here in Canada. He now seemed to suggest that the U.S., the U.K., and Germany may serve their citizens first. Have you had any indication, General Hillier, as to when Canadians will get any doses so you can actually get into the business of distribution?
Evan, no, I don't know when the vaccines are going to arrive in Canada and then in Ontario. We've had some indication, of course, that the first quarter from January to March, we will see some numbers of vaccines. But I'll tell you what, my job is really simple. My job is to make sure now that we've got the task force in place, ready to do those five things. And I use the analogy that when those vaccines arrived, just like when I was building a house and we had to order in some special hardwood floor, and it was late arriving, holding up everything else, we said, look, we don't want that hardwood when it comes off the truck from Montreal, I think is where it came from, into Newfoundland. We don't want that hardwood to touch the ground. We want it to go from that truck to our contractor into the house and be installed immediately. And we want to do the same with the vaccine. So we're going to be ready. And whenever that vaccine shows up, obviously that's not something that I control and I don't think I can influence it. But when it shows up, we want to be effective and efficient and ready to get it to the men and women of Ontario that need it and get it to them as quickly as is humanly possible.
I spoke to Minister Anand. She said they bought 126 freezers. There's a global war to get these freezers. How many logistically, how many of these super cold storage freezers that are capable of freezing, keeping the vaccine at negative 75, how many of those freezers do you reckon you'll need, sir?
I don't have a precise number, but, you know, as many as we can possibly get. One of the things that can reduce the number of freezers that we'll need, of course, is how efficient we are at moving it from where it's delivered, and we can perhaps get deliveries close to or in the points where it's most needed to the medical professionals, get it thawed, and then get it into the men and women who need it. How efficient we're doing that will reduce the number of freezers that we would need. Right. So that's our aim, again, to be efficient and therefore reduce the logistical tail that we'll need.
What about the role? Like, how would this work? First of all, do you have a budget, General Hillier? Did Doug Ford say, what do you need? Who do you need to hire? How many trucks? You've got a budget here. Do you have money to spend to get the mission tools available, the supply chain done?
Well, two things, Evan, you got to remember here now. Number one is Premier Ford said this is a no-fail mission for the people of Ontario. And do what you need to do and what resources you need, we're going to make sure you get to make sure this doesn't fail, because it is the most important thing of all right now for the 15 million people who live here. So that's number one. Number two is you got to remember this was just announced yesterday. I've been driving for 2 days straight and just arrived home here in Ottawa. I've had one briefing on the task force and the work that's been done, and now I'm back, though, and I'll get stuck in. So in the not too distant future, right, I could perhaps have some more precise answers for you, but I'll go back to the Premier's words. He said, General, you know, I really need you to do this, so I came back and agreed to it, and he said, this is a no-fail mission. Whatever you need to do, whatever you need, we're going to make sure that you've got it so that you can make this happen the way we need it in Ontario. I'm going to try to do my very best to do that.
You know, I've known you for a long time, General Hillier. See, it's a testament to your reputation that after you do a 20-hour drive, I expect you to have all the answers. But let me just ask you one other thing, General Hillier. What about working with your old colleagues at the military? We know that the military may be involved. They were certainly involved in long-term care homes. Will you want to work with the military as a kind of plug and play with, I'm sure you'll need trucks and, you know, all sorts of the private sector, but will you want the military involved in this mission?
Well, the first question I'll answer first, will I want to work with the Canadian Armed Forces and the incredible men and women who wear our nation's uniform and serve the nation? Of course I will. I'll be right in there. I already talked to John Vance, of course, the Chief of Defense Staff, And I'm going to have an opportunity to meet with him and sit down and see what plans the Canadian Armed Forces are developing in case they're needed or in case they're involved in the logistical part of this, and be prepared to work seamlessly with them. We'll do the same in Ontario with the division that's headquartered inside of Toronto with Brigadier General Malinkowski, and work very closely with his command team and make them part, so to speak, of the task force, so that when we have things that have to be done and the military are involved, we're going to be able to do it again effectively and efficiently. So, yeah, I look forward to working with it. I think that's perhaps right. One of the things that I can bring to the task force is that ability to understand the military and where they're coming from and know many of the players, obviously, and work with them seamlessly.
Just real quick, when are you meeting with General Vance? He's, by the way, the current chief of the defense staff, folks. You got to meet. I know you just arrived in Ottawa, and you got to do this show first. But when are you meeting with General Vance?
I'm going to meet with him in the next 36 hours. And, you know, he offered that opportunity to work and to come and meet and to actually spend some time. We'll do our discipline, the social distancing appropriately. But we'll sit down and walk through perhaps with one or two members of his team who have been involved in the planning. And at least I'll know what they've thought, where they see the challenges, where they think that they may be called upon to get involved. And then if they are, at least I'll be aware of that. And we'll continue that liaison for as long as I'm involved in the task force inside of Ontario.
General, just one last question here. And I know it's early days.
You said last question three times now, Evan.
But, you know, it's like a mission. All interviews change once we get into contact, as you know. But General Hillier, is it going to be the Hillier plan? Like, are you designing this from the ground up where people will get vaccinated? I mean, is it a build, or is there already a plan in place, maybe coordinated with the federal government as well? Or is this kind of you got to build it from the ground up, sir?
Well, the middle part of what you said really describes it. There's been a tremendous amount of work done by those incredible people in the public service of Ontario, of course, supported by the public service of Canada and the armed forces in certain ways. And they've developed so much detail. We have a professional medical capability in Ontario that's second to none, that's world class. We've got the infrastructure established across the province. And this is not their first rodeo. I mean, they do vaccines, for example, on a routine basis, whether it's the 5 million flu vaccines a year or shingles vaccines, both of which I've had, by the way, or other kinds of vaccines. So this is not their first rodeo. An awesome amount of work has been done in each of those five areas. I see my job with a small team now sort of superimposed on top of that to pull it all together and make sure each piece flows seamlessly with the other. And yeah, I think working with the armed forces and again, being aware of their plans and how they would do something, if called upon to do it, would be a key part of that. It's not the Hillier plan.
We all wish a lot of... Okay, but I know you're working with it. And General, we wish you luck, of course. I really appreciate the time. I did have a plan for this interview, but to rob an expression from the military, no interview survives first contact. You're the best. I really appreciate it. Good luck. I look forward to more conversations.
Evan, thank you. I look forward to chatting with you much more frequently. Thank you, man.
All right, that's General Rick Hillier. So he's in charge of that, and boy, do we ever wish that going well. And all the provinces are going to have to do that because, as General Hillier said, we all need this vaccine. But we're going to come up in a minute to find out when you're going to get a vaccine. Did the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, just say there was a delay? In the meantime, let's get a look at what we're dealing with right now. And it's not going well. COVID-19 cases across the country in many provinces are spiking. Tighter restrictions are now in place, and more might be on the way. Here's where we stand right now. Most of the new cases are being reported in Canada's biggest provinces. Quebec added 1,124 new cases and 45 deaths. We shouldn't gloss over this. These are people who just lost their lives and family members who are grieving tonight. Ontario reported 1,009 cases, 14 deaths. Manitoba, 476 new cases, 12 deaths. Saskatchewan, 175 new cases. Nova Scotia, 37. Nunavut, this is something to watch, 10 new cases today. So as cases spike, coming up next, we're going to go to Alberta, but we do want to hear from you. Your thoughts on the program or any of the key issues you wish we would cover, reach us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on email. Coming up, COVID is surging in the province of Alberta. Jason Kenney is expected to announce new restrictions later tonight. Check this out.
This is like a snowball rolling down a hill, growing bigger and faster, and it will continue unless we implement strong measures to stop.
But while that snowball's rolling, Jason Kenney has been absent. Where has he been? Why won't he have a mask mandate? Alberta NDP leader and former Premier Rachel Notley weighs in next. Stay with us. A not-so-subtle warning from the Prime Minister today. Justin Trudeau said Canada may be at the back of the vaccine line. Why? Because we don't have domestic manufacturing capabilities to mass-produce vaccines here. He suggested that other countries that do have that capacity, the United States, the UK, and Germany, may give their citizens vaccines first before Canadians get theirs, despite the fact Canada's put down money to buy these vaccines. This is a serious reality check as we hear that Americans might get vaccinated as early, get this, as December 11th. Where do we go wrong? What's being done to assure that Canada's not caught short? Let's bring in the Innovation, Science and Industry Minister, Navdeep Bains. Minister Bains, always good to have you on the program. Can you clarify what the Prime Minister said when he said that the other countries might get their citizens a vaccine first before Canada gets their doses? What do our contracts actually say?
Evan, I think it's important to manage expectations, which is that we need to explain to Canadians that we did everything possible to pursue options for international vaccine candidates. We also invested in a domestic vaccine candidate in Medicago, and that needs to go through an approval process through Health Canada. Once that approval process is complete, then we will make sure that we get the vaccine distributed to Canadians. But there is a sequence to this. There is a process to this, and it's important that people understand that we are following that process and that we will not compromise on the health and safety of Canadians.
Navdeep Bains, I got to ask you again, because I'm not sure you answered this question. The question is not the process of Health Canada. It is the Prime Minister seemed to suggest that Pfizer, Moderna, and other companies are going to give their countries access to the vaccine before Canadians get it, even though we put money down on the dose. So can you tell Canadians that we will get our doses in the first batch that we paid for, or are we at the back of the line?
I can assure Canadians that we are following the process, which is we pursued the vaccine candidates. Once they get approved, we will make sure they get distributed. I think that's important to note. If there is clearly steps that need to be taken, and we're going to follow those steps. On a per capita basis, there's 9 doses available to Canadians. That's the highest amongst any country in the world. We've built a strong vaccine portfolio, and we're confident that in the meantime, as these vaccines go through the approval process, we're going to move forward on the distribution aspect of it as well. And there's a lot of planning going on behind the scenes.
Okay, but we bought 6 million. I just want to be specific. We bought 6 million doses from Pfizer and Moderna, and we've said, Health Canada, that we're going to get those in the first quarter of 2021. The Prime Minister today, sir, seemed to suggest that we may have to wait. I'm going to play you the clip in a minute because I've got it queued up. What did he exactly mean when he said they are going to give their citizens the doses first? Tell me what he meant by that.
You have to realize that these countries, that some of them where they have these international vaccine candidates that we pursued, are producing them domestically. We in Canada are building up our domestic production capability. So when it comes to early in 2021, next year, early 2021, we will make sure that Canadians get access to the vaccine because we have these purchase orders in place. Now, the sequencing of that versus other countries may differ, but again, we're going to go through the approval process. We've made the purchases.
No, but hold on. Stop. So hold on. But hold on. This is, I got to be clear here. Navdeep Bains, look, this is the most important thing to most Canadians. I understand we originally put $12 million at the University of Saskatchewan Vaccine and Infectious Diseases to try to build up a domestic vaccine supply, $44 million to the National Research Council. The Prime Minister said today, though, that I don't even know what happened to that because we clearly don't have the capacity to produce it, according to the Prime Minister. So let me zero in on this again, because you're the Minister of Industry. In the contracts that Canada signed specifically for Pfizer and Moderna, do those contracts ensure that we get our doses before every American would get theirs, as the Prime Minister seemed to suggest? There's nothing to prevent Canadians from getting an early dose, access to those doses. Is that right?
Subject to Health Canada approval. That's the key element here, that it has to be approved. The science matters. The clinical trials matter, and it's important that we follow the process. And you're absolutely right. We made investment in the National Research Council to build up our domestic capabilities. We did invest in Vital Intervac. We, for example, today announced investment in our facilities in the Vancouver Abcellera company, the biotech company. So we're very proud of those investments. But it's important to note that until a vaccine is not approved by Health Canada, we will not be in a position to distribute them.
No. Minister, I feel like I'm just banging my head against a wall here. I know that we've invested those, but the Prime Minister said today that those are not going to help in this pandemic. So that horse has left the barn. That's for another pandemic, so let's forget about that. I'm going to play you this clip of the Prime Minister. I understand we need Health Canada's approval, but just listen to what the Prime Minister said, Minister. Check this
out. Sure, absolutely.
Any domestic production capacity for vaccines. We used to have it decades ago, but we no longer have it. Countries like the United States, Germany, and the UK do have domestic pharmaceutical facilities, which is why they're obviously going to prioritize helping their citizens first.
Okay. They are going to, obviously, he said, they will serve their citizens first. Again, this is everybody's trying to parse out what he said. Please, I understand if Health Canada approves these, and we hope it does, are
Correct.
They going to serve their citizens first, Minister Baines, before Canadians get access to the vaccine? Yes or no? It's a pretty clear question.
We will make sure that the commitment that was made in the purchase order will be followed through on. So if we ordered these doses, Canadians will receive them subject to an approval. I think I can't be more blunt and more clear than that, Evan. I think it's important to note that the Prime Minister was being very candid with Canadians that our domestic production capabilities are not as strong as some of the other jurisdictions. And we have made investments, but they will take time to come to fruition. But in the meantime, we pursue these promising international vaccine candidates. And once they get approved by Health Canada, we will distribute them to Canadians. It's plain and simple, and that's the process we're going to follow.
Right. No, I get that. Once they get approved, I hope we do. But the Prime Minister seemed to suggest that we might not still get them until they all get their citizens. But okay, Mr. Baines, I got to leave it there today. I always appreciate having you on the program. And I know I seem like a hammer on a nail today, but this is a really big issue.
I totally understand. This is really important to Canadians. All hands on deck. This is Team Canada at its best. We're working with the provinces, not only to make sure that we secure these vaccines, but that we distribute them in a safe and secure manner for Canadians.
Right. But we got to get them so we can distribute them. All right, Mr. Baines, I appreciate it. Thank you. Look,
thank you kindly.
This is I appreciate that this is going to be difficult, but we're all trying to parse what the Prime Minister said, folks, and this is why I'm pressing Minister Baines there. Are we going to have to wait till Moderna or AstraZeneca or Pfizer serves the UK or the Americans before we actually get the ones that we bought? And you guys can decide if we got an answer on that. I'm not sure we did. In the meantime, COVID cases are spiking, and especially spiking in a province like Alberta. And Jason Kenney has not appeared in public for 10, 11 days. Why not? Now, I know he's been isolating, but many people, including the Prime Minister, have isolated for weeks, and they took to social media or standing in front of microphones and have spoken. But Albertans have not seen their premier in a long time. Why not? Well, tonight he's going to appear and he's going to have a briefing. Will he announce new restrictions? Alberta is the only province with no mandatory mask mandate. Let's bring in the NDP leader for the NDP there, the official opposition, the former Premier, Rachel Notley. Rachel Notley, what do you expect to hear from the Premier Kenney tonight when he finally, I guess, breaks his silence and tells people what Alberta is facing?
Well, I mean, first of all, obviously we'll be excited to have him break his silence. I mean, he's definitely out of isolation now. We didn't see him in question period. So I mean, I, along with all Albertans, are looking forward to hearing what he has to say. You know, I mean, obviously we don't know. I think, you know, we're hearing rumors that their caucus is split on important issues like and ones that quite frankly seem like low-hanging fruit to the rest of Canada, like, for instance, mandatory masks. We don't know how much farther they will go in terms of limiting or restricting activities both in and outside of people's homes where people gather. My guess is as good as yours. We are hopeful that we don't see the kind of half measures that we saw 11 days ago. I mean, those measures were basically appeared to look like they were doing something, but honestly had no appreciable effect, as our current case numbers demonstrate.
Okay, so you've said basically, and you've told me, that he's basically mismanaged this, that he's failed. No mandatory mask mandate, that, quote, the half measures that you've talked about. Why do you think, do you really believe that he's mishandled the pandemic? In what way?
Well, let's start at the beginning. I mean, the very outset of this pandemic, the premier said the fundamental way to protect Albertans was through testing, tracing. And of course, everybody knows that. Well, our tracing system has collapsed. Just yesterday, our chief medical officer announced that they were going to essentially abandon trying to trace at least 3,000 cases and start with the ones they've got today and trace from there. So that means that we've got thousands of cases that where we won't have contact tracing. And we know from experiences in other jurisdictions that results in quite an acceleration of spread and infection. And most Canadians have known that a second wave is coming. There was time this summer for this premier to hire an adequate level of contact tracers. The fact that we saw postings go out a couple of days ago in the middle of the second wave is frustrating, and it's frustrating to all Albertans who need to see more focus on how to track this and stop the spread. That's one example.
Rachel, only... Yeah, I got to leave it there. I think tonight is going to be fascinating to see if Alberta brings in what kind of restrictions, the heavy restrictions, the half measures, cases there are spiking. Please stay safe. We're thinking about everyone there. And that situation quickly spiraling out of control, as it is in other places across the country. Rachel Notley, thanks for taking the time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, we got to take a short break. Coming up next, Free Meng Wanzhou. Why are two Canadian MPs joining a controversial event that's pushing to free the billionaire CFO of Huawei? We'll find out next. One of those MPs, Green Party MP Paul Manley, joins us to justify this event. Stay with us. Two MPs are under a lot of fire for their plans to speak at an event this evening calling for the release of Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou. The event says Meng was unjustly incarcerated by the Trudeau government at the request of the Trump administration. It's called Free Meng. The page doesn't even mention the fact that Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig, two Canadians, have been imprisoned by the Chinese government for over 700 days in retaliation for that. Green Party MP Paul Manley and NDP MP Nikki Ashen are slated to speak along with some others. Why are they doing it? Well, let's find out. Joining me now is Mr. Manley. Paul Manley, thanks so much for being here again. A lot of MPs and many people see this event, it's called Free Meng, as being a Chinese propaganda event and that you're being used as a prop by participating in this event. In other words, giving legitimacy to what many believe is China's hostage diplomacy. Why are you participating?
Well, I'm participating in a discussion and a debate. I was invited by the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute to take part in this event. I'm not happy with the name of the event or the description of it, and that actually led me to be hesitant to be involved. But I think it's important to be involved in discussions and debate and talk about these issues. My key concern is the release of Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig. They are detained in China, and we need to end this hostage diplomacy that's been going on with China.
The concern is, if you free Meng Wanzhou, you're not ending hostage diplomacy. You're literally giving it legitimacy that China says, oh, you're going to arrest her on an extradition charge from the United States. We're going to pluck two Canadians off the street. Well, she's in a mansion in Vancouver. They're going to be in a prison with no reading glasses. And now by releasing her, we essentially say to China, it works.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, China is a bully in this situation, and anybody who's paid attention to what I say in the House of Commons will know that I am not a go-easy-on-China kind of guy. You know, I've been strong on human rights for the Uyghurs, for the pro-democracy activists in Hong Kong. I'm, you know, going after the Canada-China FIPA agreement for a long time now. I'm concerned about the surveillance state. I voted with the Conservatives about, you know, the Huawei decision, whether, you know, getting that moving. So, you know, Canada can't unilaterally release Meng Wanzhou. It's part of our extradition process and our extradition treaty, and we need to respect that treaty. What we have asked for, and the Green Party caucus put out a statement back in July saying that we want the government to demand that the United States drop the charges against Meng. This is based on sanctions that were unilaterally imposed by the Trump administration in a dangerous and bellicose manner. He wants to undo what President Obama had done with the Iran nuclear deal, which was signed onto by China and Russia and the UK and Germany and France.
Okay.
He's being unilateral, and he's created this sanctions regime that the European Union doesn't recognize those sanctions. And they have instructed their citizens and their corporations not to recognize those sanctions. Canada
I understand that. And look, has Donald Trump politicized the Meng Wanzhou? Yes, he has. I appreciate that. But let's just get the facts here, because this seems like 9 degrees of separation. Meng Wanzhou is being charged with fraud. In other words, for defrauding a bank in order to get financing that may have violated that Iran deal. A BC Supreme Court justice named Heather Holmes has upheld the legitimacy of the charges and the extradition treaty. In other words, that the charges against her in the U.S. would also be considered a crime here. My point is, I get that you're upset at Donald Trump over pulling out of that Iran deal, but you're pretty far afield to try to get that. You're now, as an MP, sitting on that... you know, at an event that says Free Meng, that the Chinese are supporting, and clearly they don't see the nuances you're talking about. Sir, aren't you worried, like many say, that they just don't care about all that, that they're using you as a tool in their propaganda? That's why they call it Free Meng. It's propaganda, and that you're being used by the Chinese government to help their cause while the two Michaels are rotten in a prison.
Well, look, these fraud charges are 1 degree of separation away from the sanctions. The fraud charges are directly related to the sanctions. So this is, you know, it's about unilateralism. It's about breaking multilateral agreements. So that's key to this whole situation. If the Chinese government wants to record what I have to say about them and talk about, you know, I'm going to mention the situation for the Uyghurs and the situation for Hong Kong democracy activists, then, you know, they're free to use that information. I've been hammering away at the Canada-China FIPA for a long time. It's a lopsided agreement, you know, is anti-democratic and gives the Chinese Communist Party and their state-owned corporations a heck of a lot of power over our resources. You know, so they can pretend that they're using me as a pawn, but that is the farthest thing from the truth. I'm going to engage in debate.
Well, we'll see. I appreciate that. I think in the propaganda war, they may consider you being on the event a win. But I look forward to seeing your comments. And unfortunately, I got to leave it there. But I know you've got to get to that event. And I appreciate it, Mr. Manley, Paul Manley from the Green Party, talking about that event. And of course, we will be listening to your comments, sir. Coming up, the vaccine, is it the light at the end of the tunnel? Yeah, but are we at the back of the line? We'll find out. The Press Gallery joins us next. Stay with Power Play. Welcome back. Are we at the back of the vaccine line? Look, there's positive news, updates from Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca about potential vaccines. But the Prime Minister today warned people, you know what? Be careful. We may not have access to these vaccines yet. And we just had General Rick Hillier saying he doesn't know when they're going to get here, but he'll be prepared to roll them out. So are we prepared for a long wait? Let's bring in the Press Gallery. Bob Fife is the Globe and Mail's Ottawa Bureau Chief. Emily Nicolaz, a columnist with Le Devoir. And our special guest is Dr. Carolyn Quash, who chairs the National Advisory Committee on Immunization. Great to have you here. Let me quickly start with the politics, Bob Fife. What did you make of what the Prime Minister said? I had Minister Baines on. I just tried to get an answer as to if this means we're in for a long wait. I don't think I got one.
You'll never get an answer from Navdeep Baines. He's all talking points. But bravo to you for trying. Look, I mean, I think this is probably taking Canadians by surprise that we may not be able to have the vaccine ahead of countries like Mexico and Spain and Brazil, for example, because we don't have the manufacturing facilities in the country to make the vaccine. And so we have to have it delivered to us. And this is going to be a very big political issue for the government. If people around the world, in Europe and in the United States, are getting the vaccine and Canadians are having to wait. Now, I understand the Prime Minister says we don't have the facilities here. And this has been going an ongoing problem for, I guess, the last 30 years. We've seen the our pharmaceutical companies leaving and going to the United States and other countries where it's cheaper to produce the drugs. But I'd like to hear from our special guest here. My understanding is that the NRC in Montreal has a facility, a bioreactor that can make the vaccine. I don't know how many, I don't know whether they can make millions or not, and that we're in the process of having a second bioreactor. So we do might possibly have the facilities to be able to make some of these vaccines, but that's not my expertise.
Right. National Research Center was given $44 million, Doctor, by the federal government. The University of Saskatchewan was given $12 million, but they don't have necessarily, I don't know if they've got the copyright on that. What are the big challenges in either getting, creating, or distributing it? I mean, let's get your perspective on the challenges ahead, Doc.
Well, I agree that at this point in time, we don't know when the vaccine will come. And when it comes, the challenge is the first two vaccines require cold chain that are a lot more stringent than what we're used to. So this minus 80 and minus 20 degrees freezer are an additional challenge. And so what your panelist was saying in terms of if the NRC in Montreal could produce it, my understanding is that they're production capacity was quite limited in terms of number of doses. And I'm not sure, and I don't know, but I'm not sure that they would be able to manufacture mRNA vaccines. I think it's a different platform. I don't know if they have it. It's not what NACI looks at usually. But we are planning the rollout of the vaccine at the provincial and the federal level. And at NACI, what we're looking at is really prioritizing the groups that will be vaccinated first, given the number of doses that we're supposed to have in the first trimester of 2021.
Okay, let's dig into that. But let me just bring in Emily. Did you think that the Prime Minister was throwing cold water on hopes that Canadians will get first crack at these doses?
I wouldn't say that, but I think we all remember vividly what happened in the spring with the personal protection equipment that, you know, basically countries were behaving like pirates, you know, whoever had the facility would shotgun them, basically. And even when there were deals. And so it was, you know, back to the age of piracy. So this is, I think, one of the reasons why the prime minister is so hesitant to actually give a timeline. Although we've, you know, have a hold on those doses, and also we've paid for them, and there's a reservation made on them. It might be difficult to have an idea of when they will actually arrive. And you will, you might have also countries who are in the middle of the shipping chain who might want to get them before. And so it might actually look really complicated. And it will politically make us look like we're not, you know, in control. And that's, unfortunately, that's the truth.
Doctor, just last word on this. You talked about the challenges, not only distributing it, but who gets it first. When do you, and what should the national strategy be, if there should be a national strategy, on distribution in terms of how and who gets it first in terms of the ethics of that?
So that has been looked at NACI, and the various groups are out on the web already. So what we have recommended is to start with long-term care facility residents and then move to adults 80 years and over. And at the same time, vaccinate healthcare workers and indigenous communities. But so, you know, past that, the health being of provincial jurisdiction, provinces will look at that and refine it a little bit more to match their needs, in the sense that the epidemiology of disease might not be exactly the same in every province and territory. And at that point, you know, Quebec could decide to do it a bit differently from Saskatchewan or BC, depending on what they've seen in terms of burden of illness. But that are the groups that we have recommended to start with. And I think most of the provinces and territories will follow suit.
All right, guys, I got to leave it there. This is going to be the topic of conversation. Dr. Quash, I hope we're going to have many more times on this program to chat. Emily and Bob, please stick around because this is the big issue. But I want to flip her over to China next. And should we free Meng Wanzhou? We'll talk about that next as two MPs join a event on that. We'll also bring on the former Canadian ambassador to China, Guy Saint-Jacques. Stay with Power Play. Welcome back to the program. Tonight there's going to be something called Free Meng, an event that wants Canada to free Meng Wanzhou, the Huawei executive who's being held on an extradition treaty in her Vancouver mansion. Meanwhile, two Canadians, Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig, have been in a Chinese prison in retaliation for over 700 days. Two MPs are going to participate, the NDP's Nikki Ashton and the Green Party's Paul Manley, who just joined us. Should they be participating, and should Canada free Meng Wanzhou? The Globe and Mail's Bob Fyfe is back. Le Devoir's Emily Nicolas is here. And our special guest to talk about this is the former Canadian ambassador to China, Guy Saint-Jacques. Good to have you here, Mr. Saint-Jacques. Do you think these MPs are being used for propaganda, or is it the right thing to do to participate in these kind of things?
Well, I was very surprised to see that they were going to participate in this event. I find this scandalous when you know the treatment of our two Canadians, and there's no reference in the announcement of this about our Canadians. And so I would like to know who contacted them and who is financing this event tonight.
Oh, just let me quickly follow up. Would you be concerned that the entire event is a propaganda event?
I think that's what it looks like. I look at the website of the organizer. You know, those are leftist organizations, and I think the main goal is in life that they have is to criticize the United States. Here we have a lot at stake. You know, we have been punished by China for arresting Mrs. Meng. This is a legal case. The extradition process should proceed. And I'm very disappointed to see two MPs associated with this.
Bob Fyfe, what's your read on this?
Well, I think they're utter fools. When you think about the fact that they're supposed to be progressives and they're standing up for a billionaireess who has two mansions worth more than $30 million or $10 to $20 million in Vancouver, and they are ignoring what is going on in China. There are detention camps, which are really concentration camps, where over a million Uyghurs are. There are forced sterilizations of Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities. There is forced labor camps going on. They have developed 160 human rights organizations have said that there is an Orwellian surveillance state that is going on China. And we have two elected members of parliament who are standing up for China because they don't like the United States. This is utter madness.
Emily, Paul Manley, one of the MPs, said to me, no, I'm very tough on China. I've talked about the Uyghurs. But I said, you're literally at an event that says Free Hmong. He goes, yeah, it's a bad name, but don't worry, I'm going to make my point. What's your read on this?
I think I'm surprised that people are surprised that people who are on the left participate to leftist events. Now, I don't know the full details of this one, but it is something that a lot of MPs, especially when you're not in government, I think, you know, Monsieur Saint-Jacques, who was an ambassador, or when you're the premier, the prime minister, then what you say, what you do reflects on, you know, the Canadian diplomatic, you know, conversations that are going on that are incredibly sensitive. For those MPs who are part of a opposition party, it's not the same issue. And it happens as well that MPs will participate to events that are not, you know, worded in terms of their marketing, their communication in the most wisest way, but we'll trying to build bridges while they're there. And I would actually be more worried if that was not to happen anymore. Then we would have MPs that are very cautious about actually mingling with Canadians and being part of society, civil society. And that to me would be a lot more threatening to democracy than the kind of things that we've heard, you know, the kind of criticism that we can make to them.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to watch their content tonight. Nikki Ashton did not agree to come on our show. Unfortunately, we're going to talk about this again tomorrow. Guy Saint-Jacques, Bob Fyfe, and Emily Nicola, great to have you guys on the program. I know Bob wants to weigh in, but we'll probably read about it in the Globe tomorrow. Okay, guys, so we'll be back here in 23 short hours. Believe me, we will. Thanks so much for sharing your time with us tonight. Hug your loved ones. Have a safe evening. Take care. See you tomorrow.